Okay, since I'm talking on classroom management, I think I should start on time. I don't like being way up here, but so y'all move up close. I feel like I'm looking through my bifocals, and it's kind of scary. I wanted to say before I started, I'm kind of a get-to-the-point sort of a person. I have 7 children, and I've taught forever, and so I just kind of like to go straight for it. But hopefully you're that way, too, when it comes to classroom management. I just like, everybody thinks the way they do it is organized, I think, or you wouldn't do it that way. And there's lots of variations of organized. How many of you, this will be your first year in the classroom? Anyone? Just a few of you? Okay. I was trying to think of a way to explain to you, because people who know me very well would probably snicker at the idea that I'm going to get up here and tell you how to get organized. But in my own way, I am organized. But everybody has different views on that. I went to a church committee meeting 30 years ago, probably, and the lady who was running it was talking to us as a group. Hopefully you all understand where I'm going with this. And she said, oh, I've got to get this meeting over with and get home. I have not scrubbed the tile in my bathrooms all week. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And I made that face. And she said, what, you don't scrub the tile in your bathroom every week? And I said, well, if I do that once a month, I feel pretty good about that. And this one man was sitting there with his wife, and he looked like he was about to explode. And she looked at him, and she said, do not say a word. And he sat there for a minute, and then he smiled this cute little smile, and he said, we flush every time we go. So wherever you fall on that little line there is okay. We all have to do it. So what I'm saying is take away what you can that will help you. And I'm sure you've all sat in workshops, not here, of course, but in other places and left thinking, that would drive me crazy if I did that. Any of you ever been there? So if it would drive you crazy, just don't do it, because that's my philosophy. I want you to think for just a minute how you make a first impression. When you walk, I went with a lady once to a Hardee's hamburger place. I don't know if they have them anymore. And I said, oh, let's go there. It's real fast. And she said, that place is so dirty. Even the clerks, the cashiers behind the counter are dirty. And I'd never even noticed it. And we went in there, and the lady turned around to help us, and she was probably 8.5 months pregnant. She had on this white apron that had every piece of food on it, I think, from the whole day. And we didn't even want to eat there. We just got a drink and left. So first impressions are very important. You can be a great cook, but that doesn't necessarily make you a great restaurant manager. If you can't organize things and get things put together in a certain way, you're going to have trouble being successful. Because think about when you enter a restaurant, what you expect to see. You expect there to be an orderly arrangement of tables, or there's a list and you pick up your little buzzer so you know you're going to get to be seated at a certain time. And we all have, someone talked about Padilla a little while ago. In our culture, we all know certain things that just happen. And knowing the procedures is really what we call good manners. You know the standard procedure to get on an elevator, or to buy a ticket at a movie theater, or to get on an airplane. We all know those, and those are just procedures that make everybody's life a little bit easier. But like I said, just being good at something like cooking doesn't mean you could do very well as a restaurant manager. And in the same way, being an expert in history or foreign languages will not necessarily make you successful in the classroom. And I think some of the teachers that have the hardest time are those who've never really thought about how to run a classroom, but they're really very intelligent at what they do. But studies have shown that if the major determiner for whether or not learning takes place in a classroom is not how much you know about the subject, but about the kind of classroom management skills that you have. Because no matter what you know, if you can't get anybody to sit down and listen, they're not going to learn anything. And the first few hours of the very first day of school is going to determine, for the most part, how well your year is going to go. I used to always say it's easier to lighten up than to tighten up. If you kind of just lay your head back and, yeah, this kind of stuff doesn't bother me, I don't worry about it. Oh, dear, you're going to have such a mess in a few weeks. You kind of have to start out with a plan in mind, and that's what we're going to talk about. You need to prepare your class so that everybody's ready to begin, and you have, I told a new teacher once, you need to think what might happen, and she said, I can't be prepared because I don't know what to think of. And that's kind of true. If you're not a teacher or have not taught before, sometimes you just don't know where to begin. So we're going to talk a little bit about general terms, and then we're going to get down to real specifics. When I'm talking about classroom management, what I mean is all the things that a teacher does to organize the students, your classroom space, your time, and your materials so that learning can take place. And if you walk, maybe you haven't thought about it, but if you walk into a well-managed classroom, you're usually going to see students who are deeply involved in their work. They know exactly what to do, and they don't need to wait on you to find the papers or to dig through your desk because you know you put it somewhere, and you're ready to go and they're ready to go. They know what's expected of them, and they're usually successful because the rules don't change from day to day. Everyone knows how it's going to be every morning when they come in. And therefore, there's very little wasted time because there's no confusion. Now, I mean on a average day, there's always going to be some days like that. There's no disruption. The materials that are needed are at hand. Everything is ready to go. They've got their supplies. They know what you expect them to have on their desk or in their desk, so there's not running back and forth to lockers. Everybody knows what they have to do. And to be an effective teacher, you need to have a well-managed classroom. You have a place for everything. You know, you don't have to wonder where it is. If you tell one of the students, would you get me a ruler? They don't have to wonder, well, gosh, where did she keep the rulers? They know exactly where to go. You train your students so that they know what they're supposed to do. They know how they're supposed to come into the room. They know what it means when you say get ready for Bible or get ready for math. They know exactly what to do. And if you're successful and effective, your students are working on tasks. There's not a lot of wasted time because you don't have to keep reminding them of things that you've already told them to do. And therefore, your class will not have so much confusion because you're going to set the example for what you want them to do. And I know for myself, on the few times where I'm out of whack with my schedule and so I'm hurrying to get through faster, it's just like they say, animals can sense when you're nervous. It's like that in your classroom. If I'm getting all worked up about something, then the kids start to get agitated and things go downhill from there. So if you think about it, you're going to set the standard for how your behavior of your students will be. You should be ready for school before the kids get there. That's always good. That's something I am good at because I don't sleep late, so I'm always at school before my students come through the door. You need to be in the room to greet them. Especially if discipline's not your strong suit, the last thing you want to do is have 15 kids in there hanging out before you get there. So one of the things I say is if I'm not there, don't come in the room, wait for me in the hall. And that also encourages you to get there because it's real obvious if you're not there and you've got 16 kids standing outside your door. If you just think about the message your students will get, and ironically, some of the teachers that get the most upset with tardy students are late to their class half the time. I know we have to be in our rooms at 7:45. The students have to be there no later than 8 o'clock. And I see sometimes a teacher will get there at 7:59 and then complain if a student comes in a minute late and she's already 15 minutes late. And kids know, I don't know how they know, every student in your school knows what time you're supposed to be there. I don't even know how they know that. I can hold up a lunchbox and we are upstairs and never even see the kindergarten kids and say, does anybody know where this came from? They will say, that's that little boy that's down there in Mrs. Bunch's room. They just know stuff. And so you have to be prepared because they know when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And parents know that also. And if you walk in and you're late and the kids are all going around and you haven't got your stuff on the board and you don't have your papers ready, but you have a cup of coffee or a Diet Coke in your hand, what message have they just gotten about how important they are to you and how important your job is to you. I just think that's real important for them to know. And if you wait until the last minute to run off that worksheet or that test you were going to give, what is going to happen when you race down to the workroom? What is going to happen? The copier is not going to be working. That's just the rule. That's how it works. It won't be working, or someone has just hit the button and is printing 300 of something. One of those two things will happen. So as much as possible, get ready before you go home. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about are procedures. We talked about this a little bit. Having procedures means you're well-mannered. You understand what is expected. And your school may have their own specific procedures. Maybe depends on the part of the country you're from. What may be considered bad manners in Austin, Texas might be weird if you did that somewhere else. But you should have specific procedures. And I want to go over just some of them and give you some ideas. And you may have all your own. And like I said, this is the part where you can just mentally check me off your list if you don't want to do that. But there should be a procedure for entering your classroom. What I mean by that is they should not be bursting through the door like crazy people, but they will if you let them do that. And from the very first day of school, if they come tearing in the room and they're all excited and you're thinking, especially if you're new, I want to be nice because I don't want them to think, you know, I got the mean teacher. And you don't have to be mean, but you really, if they come tearing into my room like that, I say, boys, I know you're excited. It's the first day of school, but I want you to go back out and show me the right way to come in. Because they know the right way to come in, even though if they're new at the school, I guarantee you they know what is acceptable and what's not. As I said, I have them wait outside the door. Our kids have really, I think, very good manners. They know if they look through the glass in the door, if there's another adult in the room, they know they never open that door. That they're just so sweet about that, and I appreciate it. They will just stand in the hall and wait unless I motion them to come in. But they also know not to come into the room unless I have said, go ahead and go in, I'll be right back. It just keeps you in control, okay? It's not a big deal, but to me it helps. Okay, and getting to work. When your students walk in the door in the morning, my students have on the board exactly what they're supposed to do. They know exactly what to do when they come in. They know they empty their, we have lockers in the hall. Put your stuff in your locker, bring everything you're going to need for the entire day into the room because I'm not going to let you keep going back and forth. And they come in on the board every single day. It says, sharpen 2 pencils, underline 2, copy homework, and then whatever the assignment, I'll always have some little something. You need to have something for them to do to occupy them while you're doing the things that you have to do, whether it's taking attendance, collecting money for something. So there's always an assignment that can usually be accomplished in 10 minutes. Very often for me, it's a little mental puzzle, or it's writing a Bible verse or a poem that we're memorizing, or a couple of review problems for math. But there's always something up there for them to do. And believe it or not, I write that. I do write it every single day. And in March or April one year, I was in a hurry and I didn't follow my own rules and I didn't write it up there. And when they came in, I said, just copy your assignments and get started. And then about 3 kids asked to sharpen pencils in the middle of Bible. And I said, why didn't you sharpen them? Well, you didn't write it on the board. And I've been writing on the board for a year. So write it on the board. And I always say 2 pencils because I don't let them get up and crank pencils while I'm talking. So they have a backup pencil. For class dismissal, whether it's to lunch or to snack or to go home, you need to explain to them what that's going to look like for you. Because if you have a bell system, I've seen kids, the teacher will be in the middle of talking, they just leap out the door when the bell rings. Well, or some foolish little kid who doesn't know better will say to me, it's time for lunch. And I always say, no, see, lunch is when I say, boys and girls, get your lunch. So even if it's on the schedule, but your kids need to know that. They need to know you're in charge. And if the bell rings, they leave. You need to decide how you do that and what it looks like. But I promise you, your life will be so much easier if you have a plan. Getting ready to change subjects. You need to go through that. In the first few days of school, really, I think to be successful for the year, what you're going to be doing is going over and over. I don't plan on really introducing a whole lot of material the first week of school. I do some, but mostly I'm training them to know what I want them to do every time we come in. And I was going to go over with you a few of, I didn't copy these for you, but it would be specific to my class anyway. But my kids have, when we get their schedule and they know what we're going to do, I will say, boys and girls, when I say get ready for Bible, I want you to have on your desk nothing but your Bible, no pencils, no papers, nothing else but your Bible on your desk, and have it closed. That's all I want. And then every day I'm going to say, get ready for Bible, and they do that. And I just don't start if they're not ready. If you let them have other stuff on their desk, you know where that's going. So that's the first thing I say, get ready for Bible, and then have a routine beginning. Some years my routine beginning is they know we get ready for Bible, and I say, everybody stand. We do the Pledge to the American Flag. We say the Lord's Prayer together, and then we start Bible. And for us, we have different passages that we read. I would have, and this may sound a little compulsive, obsessive, or something to some of you, but if you've taught for more than 20 minutes, it won't. It'll make sense. You need to have a plan for how you're going to read. The plan in my room is just we read starting with A in the alphabet, and we go through. And the next day we start with B, and we just everybody reads through, and then C, so that I don't have to call on a different person every time we read a verse. And we look and we say, okay, we've got six. We're going to read 60 verses today. There are 16 children. How many verses will each person read? And so they do the math, and then I read the leftovers or the remainder. And we do that every day. And then the next day, we don't go through all that other than to decide how many verses each person reads. And because they don't think I can barely get myself around anymore. I'm so old. So that it's sort of a game every year. They want me to guess who's supposed to read. And I have sixth graders. But every morning, they'll say, do you know who goes first? And I usually do. I'm so proud. And I will kind of close my eyes and think about it. And if I don't, if I look like I don't know, whoever it is, I mean, really, they wouldn't do this for a younger, cooler teacher, but they do it for me. Whoever it is will kind of go until I call on them. And we just, that is just Mrs. Lockett's little thing we do every morning. Then we go through and say the verses. We discuss them briefly if there's something to discuss. In our school, we don't discuss what we call secondary doctrine. They have our statement of faith. But if they ask a question that's going off in a direction where only fools would rush in, I just say, you know what? That's something that your parents would probably rather discuss with you. So I just cut it off, because if you let it go, they're going to go home and say, you said it. And it may be the kid in the back row blurted something out, anti-whatever. But the kids come back home, and all they remember is, she brought that up. And so I think just be real careful, and that's what I do. Then we take prayer requests, and we have a prayer leader, and he or she will say, does anyone have any prayer requests? And I remind them that a prayer request is like my mother's sick, not a story. So we don't tell long stories, because then it takes forever. Some people like to write them out. I don't, just because I just don't like to write them out. But if you don't think you can control how many requests you're going to get, it usually works out okay for us. And then we'll have someone pray for our country, someone pray for our leaders, things like that. After we do the prayer and read the Bible, we go over our memory verse, whether we play a game. Somehow we practice our memory verse that we're learning. And then we're through with Bible, and we move to, in my class, when we have spelling, it's the very same thing. Get ready for spelling. They know exactly what that means. And it doesn't matter what it means to you, but whatever it's going to mean, they need to know from the first day, when I say get ready for spelling, here's what I always want you to do. Because otherwise, do we need paper? Can we use pen or pencil? It just goes on like that. So I just have them get ready and tell them what it's going to mean. The same way for everything. When we do grammar, get ready for grammar, and they know what that means. The first day of school, you're going to spend a lot of time just saying, okay, let's practice. Get ready for Bible, and you're going to look around and see if they do it right. For all of your subjects, you need to have a routine beginning. And for math, and we're changing math this year, so ours is going to be different. We're going to Singapore math. We've always done Saxon math. How many of you do Saxon? And so I'm kind of scared, because it's hard for me to learn new things. But we've had a lot of workshops, and I think it's going to be good. But if you do Saxon math, and you may already do it this way, but what worked well for us is that we used dockets that had the little one how many centimeters in this? They're little squares all over, like graph paper looking dockets, so that everybody has to put one number or letter per box. So you have really nice and neat rows, especially if they're doing long division or long multiplication. So everything is lined up. And when I use math dockets, they only wrote on the front of the page, never on the back. And this sounds, again, really picky, but if you don't have a standard, by the 1st of October, you're going to wonder what in the world happened to all your plans. So I say fold your paper in half, hot dog style is what little kids say, like this. So they have a natural line down the middle. Number, skip a line between problems, circle the problem number, box your answer, you must put a label, all those kind of things that I think are important. They don't write on the back because they correct every problem that they miss. We have an odd docket that they would use for lesson 1, 3, 5, and so on, and an even docket, a separate math notebook that they use for the even problems. So when they turn in math lesson 1, I have, if they turn that on Monday, they don't get it back till Wednesday, so it gives me a chance to grade in between. So then I grade their math dockets, I give them back, and they do the corrections that for all the problems they missed, they do on the opposite page that's blank. And it really is a good system. Then I clip the corner, so when they get their book, they can automatically flip it open by holding on to where I've clipped, and that's the page they go to because they know that's where they have corrections that still need to be done. And sadly, I had to start using fancy scissors because some of the smart, or not wise, but smart kids would accidentally fold back the corners and not real, and they always did it on the page where they had 10 corrections, because I would flip it open the same way, and they, oh, I didn't know that got folded back. So I use curly, scallopy scissors so that there's no doubt where it is. And that's too bad, but I think you need to make it easy for your kids to do the right thing, and that was what I did to make it easy to do the right thing. An idea that another teacher gave me, which I thought was great, is in the mail almost daily you get credit card offers, and they waste so much money because they send you those little plastic credit cards. And she said, I save all of those. It makes perfect straight edges. Isn't that a good idea? Because I've been handing out note cards all this time because I don't like the rulers because they end up making little helicopters out of them, you know, all that stuff. So now we're going to have, well, you know they do. So now we use those little credit cards, and it's kind of cool looking. And I didn't hear about this until like March, and I thought, well, I'll see if I get any. I have so far 17. But I get my son's mail, too, so a lot of them are for him. So I have all these little, now they're making them cardboard more, but they make great straight edges, and so that's what we're going to use this next year for straight edges. And just so you'll know, one of the frustrating things, how many of you in your class use a protractor? Your kids do. Okay. And what is always wrong with them? They break them. They break them, but they will come to you and say, my protractor broke. So part of my math lesson in sixth grade is the first day we use protractors is I hand everybody a protractor and I say, okay, lay it on your desk, put your hands in your lap, and just watch it. And so they're all thinking it's some cool trick, and so they just stare at it and stare at it and stare at it. And I said, did anybody's protractor move or do anything? So then I just say, if you break your protractor, you bring it to me and say, I broke my protractor. Not my protractor broke. So, but ever since I started doing that, it's never broken. I mean, that's just me. I make them accountable. So do the protractor trick, and then you'll see that they'll quit breaking. Okay. That's just a free tip for you. As much as possible, when I'm setting up my lesson plan, I do the subjects in the same order every day. If you have specials, and we are so blessed at my school, we have lots of specials where they go to fine arts, or they go to PE, or they go to Latin, they go to different classes. But even if the schedule is so, and it's almost always at different times on different days, I still do my subjects in the same order. So they know it may not be at 10 o'clock, but they know every day we will do Bible, spelling, math, grammar, whatever we're going to do, it's in the same order. And I think that is easier for them. I run off a schedule for each day and just prop it up on the board. I laminate it, stick it up there so they know, and really so I'll know, because I've forgotten to go to classes sometimes, so that they will know exactly what is coming next. But that's where it comes back to when they say, oh, excuse me, it's snack time. And I say no snack times when I say get out your snack. If you have assignment books, and we do, so that every morning, that's the first thing they're to do is write their assignments down. In the lower grades, they get them initialed by a parent every night. In sixth grade, we go through Thanksgiving. If there have been no problems with homework not being done, then we say you've earned the privilege to not have to get it signed, unless your parents want to sign it. But in the meantime, every single morning, they write their assignments down. They lay it on their desk for me to come around. And it just has to be a routine you get into. And I always use my red pen. I don't allow anyone else to use a red pen. So any red marks I know are mine. Because, you know, I mean, kids will just say, oh, yeah, you did that. You just used a pencil that day. So I just make sure that I just put a little star by their parents' initials every day. And it's such a routine that they get used to it. But if something happens and I, for some reason, don't check it for 3 or 4 days, they quit getting it signed. They know exact, you know, it has to be a routine. And if they don't get it signed, I say to them, the first time they don't get it signed, everybody deserves a day of grace. So remember to get it signed tomorrow, because tomorrow there'll be a consequence. So the second time they don't get it signed, I just said to this kid once when I taught fourth grade, he didn't have his signed a couple of times. I said, you need a better plan. I don't know what your plan is, but you need a better one. And then I just went on, and he came to my desk in about 10 minutes, and he said, okay, I have a plan. And I was so shocked. I didn't really think he would make a plan. So I thought, that's a great consequence. So now if they don't, the first day is the day of grace, and all my kids write D-O-G. I couldn't figure out why they were writing dog on all their papers. So I finally said, why is everybody writing dog? And they said, that's day of grace. That's for my day of grace. And they're really sweet. It may be, you know, November, and I'll say, have you had your day of grace? And they'll say, yeah. And so they know. So their consequence is to come up with a better plan. And because I love them, I give them 5 minutes of recess to sit and ponder what their plan will be. So they all go out, and they go sit down, and one of the boys said, come on, go play. He said, I got to go ponder. So they always ponder, but then it's important you call them back to you and say, okay, you know, I watch 5 minutes, and I call them over and say, okay, what's your plan? And they really will make a plan if you're going to ask them for it. And usually it's, I'm going to set it on the kitchen table, Mom, and then I'll put it in my bag as soon as my mom signs it. But I called a little boy over once, and I said, okay, come here. And he came over, and I said, what's your plan? And he said, could I have a few more minutes? I said, yeah, take all the time you want. So he went back and sat down until he came up with a plan. So they will take it as seriously as you take it. I mean, they're so cute. And if they don't have a better plan, then I make one for them. But what I do then, if they don't turn in homework, I don't give a day of grace for homework unless some strange thing has happened. I wouldn't even go there. If you have a parent who sends in a note that says, I told them they didn't have to do that because we got home late, you know what? I just say, okay. Now, if it happens more than once, I know sometimes it's a young, new teacher will say, oh, I just told them that's, you're sitting out in recess. And I wouldn't do that because it's only going to get you in trouble. I guess if they're still the parent, you may need to talk about your philosophy with them if that happens again, but I would not make a case out of that. Besides, you're putting the kid between you and the parent. If the parent has said they don't have to do it and you're standing there. But if I have to, I'll have a conversation with a parent. And I have done that before, and I had a mom who said, I told her she didn't ever have to do spelling homework again. She's a good speller. And I said, but our rule is they write their words or whatever. And she said, well, I told her she didn't have to. So because I'm bold, I said, so you're teaching your child they only have to follow the rules they like. And she said, well, and she backed off then. I mean, I said it nice, but that's true. But as a teacher, that's the same for you. If the school's policy is whatever it is, and you're not following it, then you're teaching your kids, well, we'll follow the rules we like. The ones we don't like, we're just going to let go. So I think you're sending a big message, and you need to be careful. I have a calendar on my desk because part of the problem is if I send home a homework notice, then I forget. And very rarely are they going to say, oh, you didn't ask me for my homework that I got signed and I didn't get it signed anyway. So I have one of those flip over calendars on my desk. And if it's Monday and they didn't turn something in, I automatically flip to Tuesday and write their name on my calendar. So when Tuesday comes, then when I flip it over, I see their name and I call for it. I think you have to have some kind of a system, because we're all like that. If something slides for a little bit, we quit. I did that at the library. I was taking my kids to the library in the summer, and we would go every week to the library, and one time, and I had seven kids, so they would each, I would allow them to each get five books, so we've got 35 books. Well, we came back to the library late, and I went to the big desk, and I said, oh, this is going to be bad, they're all late, and she went, don't worry about going. That happened to me 2 weeks in a row. Now, I'm an adult. By the third week, I didn't even care if we brought them back, because she wasn't charging me for them anyway. So we went on vacation. We came back to the library, and I had gotten myself some books. We had like 40 books that were about 3 weeks late. And the kids said, boy, this is going to be bad. And I said, oh, they don't even charge fines. And so this was in Florida. So we set 40 books on the counter, and I just started walking through like I always do. And the kid leaned over and went, ma'am. And he said, let me tally up that fine. And I said, I thought y'all weren't charging. He said, well, we've got a new electronic system now. We can do the fines. I had to write a check for almost $50. It was horrible. But, I mean, I'm an adult. And once I thought they weren't enforcing the rule, I quit following it. So you really, if I would do that, kids will do that. You have to make it worth their time to do it. For myself, I have a folder for each day of the week. Because you never know. You may think, I'll be there early. But maybe you're going to get sick or you're going to have a family emergency and you won't be there the next day. So I have on one of those little stack things a file folder for each day of the week. And if it's a spelling or vocabulary that I'm going to review every day, before I even put it back, as soon as I finish with it, I go ahead and stick it in the next day's folder. I try to run off all the tests, everything, and stick it in the right folder for the week. It just makes your life so much easier. It doesn't always turn out the way I planned, but for most of the time, it does. If you have students who are bringing in, especially the younger they are, they just dump notes on your desk. And you may find it at 3 o'clock, and it says, please call me no later than 9 o'clock this morning. So I have the tray on my desk. I explain to the kids, anything that has to have my attention, anything you bring from home goes only in this tray. It can't be anywhere else. I used to have a basket somewhere so that when they bring stuff in, it goes right there. So I know I've got to look at that before we do anything else. I have desk inspections. When I had little kids, I called it the desk fairy would come. And that just meant that one afternoon when everybody was gone, I would go around and get little starlight mints, and I would just stick one in desks that were amazingly tidy and clean. And I never even told him. And then one kid went, I've got a piece of candy in here. And I went, really? And then somebody else said, I have one too. Well, then Peter, the slob, who you couldn't even get it in his desk. It was horrible. And so I said, maybe somebody inspected desk. And so he starts digging through his desk. And I said, let me just save us both a lot of time. But after that, they got better and better. And it wasn't forever. And I don't give bribes. To me, a bribe is if I say I'll put a mint in everybody's desk that's clean when I check them today. That's a bribe. A reward is just randomly, maybe 3 times a year, without any reminder of anything, I just drop, and sometimes it's only 1 or 2 kids that get it, but they all start to get better. And it just is a fun way, I think, because and I would always clean up desks before parents are coming, make sure the kids clean it, because I had a parent 1 year, and I hadn't even thought about it, but I'd had the kids clean out their desk. Then we had conferences, and she said, one of his problems is he's a total slob. Let me show you his desk. And she lifted up the top, and she was so impressed, because I had made sure. So if you don't ever clean them any other time, before parent conferences, always have them clean out their desk. Let's see. The end of the day, like I said, you need to leave. I go ahead and write on the board what I want to be on the board in the morning, because that's then I don't have to worry if there's an emergency or if I'm late for some reason. I have it all there. Okay. I have just a few things that – let me see. Now I'm going to go back to my procedures. I'm sorry if I threw you off. I'm being unorganized. You need to have some way to ask for help, whether it's they raise their hand or I don't know what your way is. Years and years and years ago, I read in an instructor magazine, and I don't know if they even make instructor magazines anymore, but they used to, a teacher's magazine. And the teacher said she used take a number like you do at some restaurants or at a post office. And so I went to Office Depot and bought a little spindle, and I bought some little metal key label things, and I just number one through how many kids I have, and they're on the spindle in order after we've done our math lesson or writing or whatever we're doing, and then they need me to check their corrections or they have questions, I say, I'm ready to help you with your work. I go sit down, and they take a number. They come to my desk. I help them with what they've got, and then we put the number back. It's such a great system if you haven't tried it. The only time it doesn't work is if you let kids bump in the line, like if they just run up and you don't say, could I have your number, please? And they, because that way, most of the time if it's math, I'll say, if you take a number, then skip a space for that problem and keep going. Most of the time, if they have a number past five, they've solved the problem before they, when I call their number, they, oh, I figured it out. Because most of the time they can figure it out if they don't have the opportunity to run to you. I don't like walking around helping them, because if I'm a kid sitting here and I'm doing problem 15 and the teacher's standing right beside me explaining to somebody else how to do problem 12, that would drive me crazy. So I think noise-wise that's not good, and also encourages them to take their time. If I'm editing writing papers for them, we do the same thing. They just take a number, and that way they get waited on, and then we put the numbers back on. One of my helper chart jobs is always a teacher's aide, which is my favorite job, and the kids love it, even sixth grade, and they do whatever needs to be done. One of them would be putting all those numbers back on the spindle in order. One of them might be erasing the board. Even sixth graders, they all fight to be who can erase the board. So I just have the teacher's aide. If we're going to drill jingles, Shirley jingles, I will say, you know, who's my teacher's aide? Y'all go over three or four jingles. They can do all that kind of stuff and gives them a chance to be more engaged, and it gives you a chance to get prepared. Another thing to practice is what you're going to do when you go to lunch or when you go to recess. And here's my philosophy on that, because as I said, I really believe we should teach children to be responsible, and they should have natural consequences when possible, or safe, logical consequences otherwise. So what I say to them from the first day of school is, when we're going to fine arts or to Latin, that's my time, because it's not, you know, you have to be there, the teacher's expecting you. When we're going to lunch, when we're going to recess or snack outside, that's your time. And you can take as much time as you want to line up quietly, because I don't care. And really, I don't care. I kind of hope they won't line up, because then I can, and I'm very dramatic, and I will go to my desk. I'll say, okay, we'll go to snack when you're ready. And I go sit down and start grading papers or doing something. Just, and at first, they just keep talking and talking and talking. And then finally, one of them will say, yo, get ready, get ready. We're on our time. And so they know, and you have to make a choice when you really, I truly, absolutely do not care if they spend 10 minutes not lining up to go outside for their 15-minute snack break. I don't care. Because snack is going to end 15 minutes after I said it's snack time. And I did that once, and they just would not be quiet, and I didn't care. So finally, they all lined up, and then they go, we're ready. And I said, okay. So we went outside, and we had a 20-minute recess, and this had taken probably 15 minutes to be quiet and get in line, which was great for me. And so after they'd been outside, say from 10 to 10:15 was recess. We went out at 10:10. So at 10:15, I whistled and said, it's time to go in. And the wise kids were going, oh, we didn't get hardly any recess. And the really goofy kids were going, man, that went by really fast today. And then they'd go and line up. And one old boy, that was fast. And he said, did we get a shorter recess? And I said, we're coming in at the same time we always come in. He said, man, it just seems short today. It wasn't a shorter recess. And I said, well, we're coming in at the same time. I said, it could seem shorter because we came out 10 minutes late. And so the next day, bam, they get ready to go outside in less than 30 seconds. So it really works. But you have to use self-control. And it doesn't work if you keep saying, okay, guys, I told you. You have to really not care. After raising 7 kids, I really don't care. I don't mind just sitting. So I just sit there, but it really works. We did the same thing last year. They were turning into slobs in the lunchroom. So we said, you know what? We're tired of telling you to clean up. So I'm just telling you right now, because we have 80 sixth graders. When you're ready to go outside, you will all be seated. The tables are clean. That's how we will know it's time to go outside. We will not go until then. Next day, we go in there, and it's exactly what you think. They're not having food fights, but they're not cleaning up, and it's just a mess, and they keep waiting. And one of the other teachers couldn't stand it. She said, should we tell them? I said, don't make eye contact, just sit here. So we're all just sitting there pretending we're eating, and a few of them finally started getting it. They go, they're waiting on us, they're waiting on us. So they really, and after that we didn't have to. And see, it's just so much easier than you having to keep haranguing them about stuff like that. So that is my suggestion about that. Okay. We have rules about what to do when visitors come in. I don't know if you do or not. Our students, if we tell them to, are supposed to stand up and greet the visitor. So if I know it's Mr. Jones and he comes in the room, I'll say, boys and girls, would you stand up and say good morning to Mr. Jones? And they will stand up and say, hopefully not in a sing-song voice, good morning, Mr. Jones. And then I'll say, thank you, you may be seated. To me, that's just good manners. And at least in the South, it's good manners. And they do that. If it's another sixth grade teacher, they know they're going to come in and out of each other's rooms all day long, and they don't have to do that. So if it's another sixth grade teacher, sometimes I will say the first time, say good morning to them, and after that, they don't have to. If it's someone I don't know, maybe it's a visitor, I will go over and introduce myself to the visitor, and when they tell me who they are, then I will turn to the class and say, would you stand up and say good afternoon to Mr. whoever it is. So I think that's just good manners, and it's training that they need to learn to do that. If they need to leave the room, it doesn't matter what your system is, but you need to have a specific system for what they do when they need to go. I just say, they know when bathroom breaks are, but that is not worth the hassle to me. So unless I really believe they're taking advantage, if they ever say, could I please go to the restroom, I will say, if it's an emergency. And after a few times, sometimes I go, yeah, it's not. And I think most kids rise to the occasion if you expect them to. So, and I tell them, if I ever say to you, no, you cannot go, but you know this is not an option, just quietly go and you won't be in trouble. And I think that's happened maybe once. So I just, because some kids are so obedient, they will sit down and have an accident if you say no. So give them a chance to go. Okay, let's see. Student areas. I always begin the year with desks in rows, even if I'm going to let them have pods or little groups later. I think until you know the dynamics of your students, it's just smarter to have them all in straight rows facing you. Later, you may want. I kind of change them around a lot. A lot, maybe once a quarter. Because I think they just like to. But I would start out the year in rows, make sure you can walk between the rows, make sure there's room for the kids to get out of their chair without banging into other people. If your desk adjusts, make sure that they're at a comfortable height for the kids in your class. I went in, a second grade class one year, and it was a new teacher. It was when I was doing division leader things. And those poor little kids, all their arms were on their desk like this. I mean, it was kind of sad. And later, I said to the teacher, how come you have their desk up so high? And she went, these desks adjust? So just check on things like that, because this is not the comfort level. Try to be sure every child can see the board, and common sense, don't set the tallest kid in the class right in front of the shortest student in the class. And some of that you're going to have to kind of play it by ear as they, get there. But that's when I'd run back to ask the teacher before, is there any kids that I can't hear as well or see as well or whatever reason they need to be in a certain place? And then you don't have to obviously move them 3 weeks into school. Keep all the high traffic areas clear, like the path to the pencil sharpener, the trash can, wherever you're going to have them line up, the path to your desk. And plan right now where you're going to put everything, where you want them to put their backpacks. Where do you want them to put their lunch boxes? Because you're going to have a gigantic mess if you don't have a plan from the first day. We just use a laundry basket that fits under the counter, and that's where their snacks and their lunches go. I don't let them keep their backpack in the room because if it's got very much stuff in it, as soon as they stand up, it flips over backwards anyway. Especially if it's a non-uniform. For us, they can only wear inside uniform tight jackets or sweaters. So if it's non-uniform, I just have them go put it in their locker. Then I don't have to keep saying, take it off. So, but you need a plan. And a lot of teachers, I don't care where they put it. Well, you really need to care where they put it because you're going to have a mess. So whatever your plan is, you need to have a good one. We have athletic bags and it gets really messy and crowded, but I at least have them all pushed over into one corner, even though I don't have a really good place to put them. let's see, from your desk, you should be able to see all of your students. And usually our desks, in the way ours are set up, the desk is at the back of the room, which I think is better because they're going to have to turn around and see if you're watching, if they're going to do something wrong. And just for those of you who may not know, never put the class clown at the front of the room because that's where he wants to be so he can entertain his friends. I always put the class clown at the back so if all the kids who are obeying are watching me, it doesn't matter what he's doing back there. Nobody can see it anyway. So that's just a little aside for you. I also, and just me, just a security thing for me, I like to be where I can see the door. I don't want to be so that somebody could open the door and come in my room and I can't see who that is. So, and that may not work for you, may not be able to do that, but I like my desk to be so that if I'm sitting at my desk, I can see when an adult is coming, because I've been in a school where a man was looking for rooms to rob and he swung open the door and came in my room and scared me. I didn't know he was a robber at the time, but he looked really surprised and he quickly closed the door and walked away. And it was when my door opened to the outside. So I would just want to be where I can see. And if I see a strange person walking down the hall, or a stranger, I do see strange people, but if I see a stranger, stranger walking down the hall, I will go out and say, could I help you? Because somebody needs to do that. And at our school now, you have to get a visitor's tag. And if you see somebody without one, you're supposed to challenge them, not in a bad way, just say you need to go get that. So I think, sadly, in our day and age, you have to do that. I try to keep, and I can't always, but I try to model what I want the students to do, which is keeping my desk in order. And I don't always succeed, but then I will tidy it up before they come up to my desk to get help. And you need to decide for yourself if your desk is going to be off limits, because kids sometimes, for me, are very forward. Like if they need scissors, I have had kids just open my desk door and they're digging around in there. I just think that's really, really rude. And I think part of you establishing your authority is to tell them, you know what, you don't take anything off of my desk or open a desk drawer without permission. And that's not a bad thing. Kids expect you to be in charge. I think they get a little uncomfortable when the adult in the room is obviously not who's controlling the class. So I think those are just tiny little things for kids to see how it is that you're going to keep them in line. I have a little job chart. It's real small. And if you come to school tonight, you can see my room. And, it's up there, I think. And I have real simple jobs. I have a collector and a distributor, which is exactly what it sounds like they are. And I have a teacher's aide. I used to have a reminder just because I could never remember anything. But I've now learned to remember on my own, so I don't have a reminder anymore. And I think I have a prayer leader. We don't have a door holder. We used to expect a gentleman will always hold the door. And the girls in our school always line up before the boys. And it's just a habit to them. If somebody questions that, we just remind them in a restaurant, the moms usually, hopefully your dad lets your mother go first. And our kids don't even think about it. When I say line up, the girls line up the first, the boys line up behind them. And I think it's a good training for them. And then one of the boys always holds the door. You need to have somewhere in your room, at least I think you do, to display student work. We have a bulletin board in the hall where we take turns putting up student work, or you may have a designated bulletin board in your room, or we have the laminated cabinets. Sometimes we even put them on the cabinet doors so that they can, as long as it's neatly done. Now, one thing that the younger your kids are, the more they draw pictures for you. And it's so sweet, and I know y'all maybe think she is so cynical, but what happens if you love it and so you just tape up on the wall a picture from a child? What happens tomorrow? You have 15 more. I mean, it just goes on and on. So Doreen Howell's my boss, and she suggested a keepsake folder. So I always have it, and I always write keepsake on it. It's just one of those little pocket folders. And so if they make something for me or they send me a note, I keep all of this stuff, and I just put it in here, and they like that. And so actually there's a few little things in here from this year, and they know that. And so it's an easy way to keep it and to cherish what they give you. And, I mean, I'll show it to everybody. Look what they made for me. Isn't this pretty? But then it goes in my keepsake folder. Then I don't have a big mess all over the wall. Also, you need to post your class rules. I would guess that most of your schools, they ask you to post them. And mine are real simple. Someone came to me once and said, I've got my rules. I want you to look at it and see if you think it's okay. And it was like 25 rules. And I really thought, no, who would read? Who would make? But who would read if you did make 25 rules? So some of you, if you go to there's maybe some master school people here. And this is where I got my rules years ago when I worked at the master school. This covers everything. Be ready, be attentive, be cooperative, be courteous, be obedient. I cannot think of anything that has happened yet that doesn't cover one of those. So you don't have to use those rules, but your rules should be really, really short. You should, if you can't list them in four or five things, and I would never let kids make the rules. That was one of those trends in education a few years ago. It may still be, but where you were to sit down and have your kids think of the rules we would like to have to make our class run smoothly. But you know, and I know, you're going to manipulate them until you get the rules you want anyway. So just make the rule. I mean, I just think you need to be in charge. One of my students challenged a decision I made, and I said as sweetly as I could, I do not know what made you think this was a democracy. Because we're not voting on who sits out at recess. And so I think you should just make the rules. Your life will be so much easier if you just do that. Now, my last thing I want to tell you is about how to organize and decorate your room. And this is very much up to your school. We try to emphasize the classical look, which should, for us, and I teach at Regents, in the older grades at least, it means no little cutesy cartoony type things. We don't use fluorescent colors for the bulletin boards. We try to use classic colors. And we each of our classes has, each grade has two artists that we focus on during the year. And so we always try to have up a few prints from the artists that are our class's artists, but not just stuff plastered everywhere so that you can't even focus on it. Our grammar school headmaster calls that visual noise. And it really is. For some people like myself, you can't even concentrate on anything because there's just stuff everywhere. So just be careful that what you put in there, that has a purpose to it, and it doesn't just become wallpaper and the kids don't even pay attention to it. I would assume that you use a timeline. And if you do, it's not always possible. Sometimes our wall space is very scarce. I try to put it so the kids can see it at their eye level. Sometimes you have nowhere to put it but above your board. But we have the kids make the cards for it, so it's just harder to climb up there and put the cards up. But I just, whenever we do something that I want a timeline card for, I will say, Mary, you have the next timeline card, and I put her name in the corner of the board, and she just, when it's finished, she erases her name and gives me her card. And I'm not real strict about it, but her name's still there in about a week, I'll mention to her again to get it done. Let's see if I've got everything. I don't want to leave anything out. I'm going to hurry and fast. Oh, we have 5 minutes. I can do this in 5 minutes. I wanted to try to help you, just a few tips for you, and you may not need them. And Matt Whitling is going to talk about discipline, and there's no one I've ever heard that I thought had a better handle on that. But I have a few tips, especially for new teachers, to make your life easier. There are a few areas, and those of you who are from my school have heard this before, but it bears repeating. Sometimes when it comes to discipline, you will not know the truth. There's no way for you to find out, and that's the most frustrating things when someone says, he just hit me. No, you didn't. Yes, I didn't. No, you didn't. And you don't know whether they did or not. What I have found that works with my own children when they were young and with students is to just go with it. I mean, not in a bad way. Y'all may think this is crazy, but for example, we had some boys out on the playground, and they were swinging really, really high. And our rule is you cannot jump out of the swings because someone will get hurt. So I look over there, and it's about as far as from here to that wall. And the boys were swinging real high in unison. They all leaped out of the swings. And I hollered over there, and I said, boys, do not do that again, or you won't be allowed to swing. Okay. So wait a few minutes. They all do it again. They all leap out of the swings. So I said, that's it. No more swings for you guys. So they go play somewhere else, and in about 2 more minutes, there's one little boy, one of those same boys, on the swings again. So I called him over, And I said, why were you back on those swings? I told you not to. And he said, I didn't hear you say that. And I said, well, everybody jumped off the swings and you jumped off. You did not hear me say that. And he said, no, I didn't hear you say that. So, because I love him and I'm concerned, I said, you know, that could indicate a hearing problem. Because, I mean, he's committed. Because can I prove he did not hear me? No, I cannot prove that. So I said, you know, that could be dangerous because you could be way across the playground and I might need you and you wouldn't hear me. So I'm not going to make you play way over there anymore. I'm going to let you play closer to me so that you can hear me. And then it's so much fun. So then I said, you know, I want to give you as much freedom as possible. So back up just a little bit. So he backed up and I said, can you hear me now? And he said, and he's by then going, oh. But he knows now he's got to either say, I was lying, I heard you the first time, or he's got to go along with me. And he said, yes, I can hear you. And I said, okay, back. So I did about three times. Can you hear me now? And then I said, okay, it seems to me you're safe within about a 15-foot radius of me. And I said, so you can play there. And I said, tomorrow you let me know if you feel like your ears are working better. So, and it's so, I just love that. A little boy was belching really loud. And I said, who did that? And he said, I can't help it. Well, here we go again. I said, don't do it again. So a little bit later, it's this loud, prolonged belch. And I said, I told you not to do that. And he said, I can't help it. Now, I cannot prove that he cannot help it. And I said, really? That could indicate a digestive problem. So I said, if that happens again, I'm not going to make you go out and play. I'm going to let you sit in the nurse's office and let her check on you. And he went, okay. And it didn't happen. I mean, see, it's just so great. So, but now you have to do it with a straight face and no jabbing sarcasm. You just have to do it because I'm just here to help. A little boy bit another kid on the arm, and I said, why did you bite him? And he said, I couldn't help it. I said, you couldn't help it? Your jaws just clump. I said, that could indicate a neurological problem. Because I said, your brain has to send a signal to your mouth. So, I mean, is that true? Did I make that up? No. So I said, if it happens again, I'm going to suggest your parents have you checked out. And it didn't ever happen again. So don't waste a lot of time on that kind of stuff. The last tip I will give you is never argue with a child. It will just wear you out, and it will end badly. And the reason I told a mom, and she said, my son has always argued with his teachers. He never argues with you. She said, I know why. And I said, why? And she said, because you won't argue back. Well, that's true. You can't. Kids used to come to me when I taught first grade, and they would say, he's chasing me. He won't quit chasing me. And I said, stop running. And he went, and he just looked at me and I said, try chasing me. And he looked at me and I said, okay, chase me. So it's the same thing. If you do not let them argue, if you don't argue back, they cannot argue. And arguing to me is if I say, you need to put that away, and they say, I'm trying to get blah, blah, blah. The only correct answer to what I say is, yes, ma'am, or just do it. And really, that solves almost every problem you will have if you tell them from day one, do not argue with me. And I will say, if you should be foolish enough to forget, I'm going to go like this, and that is your last hope of getting out of this. That means you better back off. And they do, and most of the time now they'll go, what? Yes, ma'am. And they just don't argue. So those will help you. And I hope the other ideas have helped you a little bit. I will see some of you hopefully in just a little while over at our campus. Thank you for your attention.